Mazzara and Parra project to Amamora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the bandit scare ya. Machado, Urbano, or Nolan Arenado.
Teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alazric Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Heath is back. Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Finally, it's not just going to be me and Scott blah, blah, blahing all day long. You're welcome, yeah. Listeners.
People are already, before I even said a word, composing their, man, the podcast was so much better when it was just Adam and Scott.
No, we missed you. We missed Chris, that Al guy. We miss everybody. It's good to have you back, Heath.
Hey, it's great to be here. I'm excited to talk about how many touchdowns Clayton Kershaw might score next year.
Oh, Clayton Kershaw is just going to pitch on 3 days rest for the rest of his career. Send us your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We are going to talk about starting pitcher rankings and the differences in the top 36 for Scott and for Heath. You can find those on our website on cbssports.com/fantasy. Just go to baseball. I don't really have to tell you how to navigate to there. You know, baseball, then rankings. Makes sense, right? And the rankings are now up for every position, right?
Every position.
Yes, though it doesn't go especially deep. It's kind of just a little foretaste of the rankings to come when draft prep season really begins to heat up. Like, we have top 12s around the infield, but you do get a side-by-side comparison, and there are some differences there. I think Keith and I haven't been working together long enough for the rankings to appear to be even on the same planet.
It's funny because I first looked at our rankings side by side and said, man, there's too many similarities. And Scott first looked at them and said, man, they're so different. So yeah. I don't know what that means.
All I looked at were the starting pitcher rankings, and they were pretty different. It's kind of funny because Heath and Dave and Jamie were talking about how they come to get to their rankings. And Dave and Jamie, they have been working together so long, and they do sort of have rankings that are pretty similar week by week, and Heath is so different. So I just think Heath is very different. I think we could just leave it at that.
No, I don't think that's it. I honestly think there's something to the time spent working together, because I've had side-by-side rankings now with, I think, four different people. And every time there's been a new person inserted in there, it looks like their rankings are from a different alternate universe compared to everyone else. But then over time, that seems to decrease. I think we start to have an influence on each other that reshapes the way we think about everything.
Scott.
Yeah?
I thought we weren't going to use the bleeper today.
What did I say?
We had a talk before the podcast about how I got bleeped on the football podcast. And I was hoping nobody would get bleeped on the baseball podcast.
Did something, when I said reshaped, did something come out?
You just got bleeped.
Oh, okay.
I do have to bleep that, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no question. Well. You can't say that word.
For all the listeners out there.
I wasn't saying that word. I was saying reshaped, and I guess there was a stumble in there.
There was a stumble.
Is that when it happened?
That's exactly when it happened.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Fair enough.
Gosh.
The point I was making is lost then.
Heath comes back for the first time in a month. Scott's already dropping the S word all over the place. What happened here? So, yeah, they're different on Arrieta, Verlander, Greinke, Harvey, Nola, Kyle Hendricks, and Danny Salazar, among others. So we'll talk about those guys. Heath, how was fantasy baseball for you? We haven't spoken in a while. How did the season turn out? Any wins? What happened?
It was okay. It wasn't near as good as last year. And I don't really know what the difference was. So it was a kind of a frustrating finish, because I did have several teams make it close to the end, but I did not have any championships.
Me either.
Yeah.
So weird. I had the same year. I had a great year in 2015 and just kind of a solid but disappointing season in 2016.
By far the biggest disappointment was a league where I was the number one seed in a categories league. And we tied, and I was a number one seed, so I just assumed that I moved on to the championship. And I didn't, because they went back to our head-to-head record over the season to determine the tiebreaker.
Oh, man. That's a bad tiebreaker.
Tie should always go to the higher seed.
Yeah.
And actually, you can actually set a home and away team on CBS.
Right.
And so you say ties go to the home team.
Yeah, well. We're the best.
Yeah, yeah, the higher seed. So I feel for you, Heath.
Yeah, that stinks, man. But we can't figure out. I mean, I've said this a number of times, but I think one of the big differences for me 2015 to 2016 was I didn't have that breakout guy that I had on a lot of my teams in 2015. And I did have Will Myers. He was my guy. And I think when he started slumping, it really changed my season. But 2 years ago for me, it was Machado. I did really well for a lot of reasons, but he was a big part of it. And this year I had Myers. He was pretty similar until, you know, the last 2 months or so.
Right.
That was it for me, Heath. I'm not sure if you have any theories.
No, I just sucked this year.
Okay.
Got to get those rankings more in line, Heath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll learn. He'll learn. This is year one. Year one doing baseball rankings, right?
Last year was my first year doing baseball rankings, yes. It was my second season.
Okay.
Here.
Well, time flies. Clayton Kershaw may pitch on 3 days rest in game five. He's already pitched on... how many times has he pitched on 3 days rest now? Twice? In the postseason?
Well, it's hard because you factor in that short relief appearance.
Yeah, not including that.
I think just once.
I'm not sure what game one of the NLCS was, how many days rest that was. I'm not sure. I'd have to go check.
It's hard to figure that because it was definitely less 3 days or less from the relief appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. That does kind of cloud things up. But I'm going to ask you a question that you're going to say no to, but I'm going to ask it just to ask it. This heavy workload in the postseason, does it scare you at all for Clayton Kershaw going into 2017?
Well, I mean, he kind of has innings to make up, right? From the 2 months he missed. It wouldn't scare me, no.
Didn't we have this concern a couple years ago with Madison Bumgarner?
Well, except in his case, it was just innings added on to an already normal season workload.
Right.
And Madison Bumgarner's kind of a freak.
He is a freak.
Regard, I'm not sure we can use him as the standard for comparison, but I think Kershaw has an easy out because he missed so much time.
I did have one player to compare it with, and this is such a stretch. Kershaw would probably have to pitch on 3 days rest twice more for me to even consider it, but it was Sabathia after his season with the Brewers, his half season with the Brewers. And he definitely regressed going to the Yankees in 2009. Now, part of that was 2008 may have been his best year.
Yeah, I mean, he was still Cy Young caliber in 2009.
He had a 3.37 ERA through 230 innings, I think, and struck out 7.7 batters per nine, which was lower than 2008, but not lower than what he had done previously in his career.
I don't even think those numbers sound as good on the surface as they actually are because, you know, it's a different time. He was fourth in AL Cy Young voting that year, to put it in perspective.
Okay. All right, so we're not worried about Clayton Kershaw. Any thoughts on the playoffs, guys?
Go Cubs.
Why?
I knew that it would be difficult this year without really anybody to cheer for, so I put together a list of who I wanted to win it in order, and the Cubs were second, so I'm cheering for the Cubs now.
Very.
The Nationals were first. And they got knocked out, so now I'm cheering for the Cubs.
Does it surprise you at all this is the way Heath goes about determining his rooting interests? So pragmatic.
I mean, I knew that the Royals would be first and the Cardinals would be last. And then probably the Yankees would be second to last. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
I just kind of go into the playoffs and I'm like, and you know, I'm watching and I just kind of let the mood take me, you know?
Yeah.
Well, like, I enjoy watching this team, so I want to see them do well. I enjoy the personalities I'm seeing there.
I enjoy the Indians.
Yeah, I am conflicted on that. I definitely like them better than the Blue Jays, though. I mean, the Blue Jays would probably be third from the bottom, so.
We got a lot of Blue Jays fans in our audience, Heath.
I know. Why do you think I said that?
But they are kind of like Blue Jays fans, you gotta admit. And I'm a Yankees fan. I know when my team is not likable. I know it. The Blue Jays are not a likable team.
Don't we have a lot of every kind of fan listening to us? Is there an underrepresented fan base?
Probably not a lot of Braves fans.
Oh, come on. There's a lot of Braves fans. Like, that's probably what, the sixth largest fan base in baseball?
They're dormant, though.
Here's the thing, Scott. Like, I just figure almost every Canadian listener we have is a Blue Jays fan.
Well, that's presumptuous of you, Adam.
I think I get more like Blue Jays comments than any other team. Red Sox, Yankees, Blue Jays, I think are the three that I see the most.
All right. No, you may be right. I was just, you know, I thought it was an odd comment by you.
How many Braves fan emails can you remember?
There's a ton of Braves fans emails. Get out of here.
All right, Braves fans, step up. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Step it up. Send it in. all right, playoffs are great. Two games today. By the way, the debate is on tonight. I looked at some prop bets for the debate tonight. They are outstanding. I mean, that you have like it's. Should we give advice?
I want to give advice on prop bets.
I think our
Canadian listeners can wager on those.
Yeah, probably. All right, fine. I'll pull them up. But let's go to the starting pitcher rankings here, and I'm just going to point out several guys that you differ on. Not necessarily that much, but enough, I thought. Jake Arrieta, who did not have a very good outing last night against the Dodgers, was kind of doing all right and then fell apart a bit. He is ninth for Scott and sixth for Heath. So let's start. Heath, you're the high man on Jake Arrieta. I'm going to pull up.
I like that now. I know, right? I'm higher than Scott. I'm the high man on.
You've been fifth, not sixth, ahead of Corey Kluber, ahead of David Price.
It may depend on whether you're looking at Roto. I don't think that one should change for Roto to head to head, but sixth sounded better, but, no, that's probably about right. Yes, he had a down year by his standards, but we're still talking about a guy that's going to come close to winning 20 games next year, going to have an ERA right at or under three, going to strike out about a batter per inning. And again, especially with this one, the difference between sixth and ninth at starting pitcher is minuscule.
Very surprised to see him ahead of Kluber, though, since you're a Kluber truther.
I am a Kluber truther, but my argument for Kluber was always that he's an ace. Well, there's more than six aces.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Kluber's the one, because I think there's a clear top five. Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber, in some order. There are the five who we thought were aces going into the season, and they actually performed like aces during the season.
We're not saying that 18-8 with a 3.10 ERA is ace-like performance.
I think if you chop up Arrieta's season, his ERA in the second half was like 3.70, right? It was worse than that.
Well,
he did not feel like an ace for a good portion of the season.
Scott, well, I mean, there's
Kluber
a very
didn't feel like an ace the first month and a half, 2 months. Adam, that's why Adam was yelling at us.
Listen, with Arrieta, it's very clear what happened here. First 14 starts, he had a 1.74 ERA, and he was 11-1. And then my birthday came, Scott.
I thought your birthday was a good thing, though.
Not for Arrieta. His next start for Cubs opponents, it was after my birthday. I think mine's June 19th. I think his next start was like June 21st or something. Since that point, 4.31 ERA. So maybe in the second half it was what Scott said, but last 17 starts, 4.31 ERA. And a lot of walks.
Yeah, specifically what went wrong for Arrieta was a lot of walks, which, you know, I'll point out, he didn't walk anybody yesterday. So I guess that's encouraging. But that is one of the bigger question marks, I think, among the ace caliber pitchers, is just what happened to Arrieta's control. Cause it was a strength for him. It was a big, even going back the year before he won the Cy Young, when he really, the year that put him on the map in fantasy as a pitcher who could be great, just excellent control. And so, I'm just guarding against that possibility. I mean, ranking him ninth is still ranking him as an ace. It's still drafting him as an ace. It's not real concern. It's just being a little cautious when there are other aces out there.
They get more interesting as we go along. Justin Verlander is number six for Scott. I believe he will be 34 next year. Justin Verlander had a great season. Number 11 for Heath. That puts him behind Price, Syndergaard, Cueto, and Lester. So Scott, loving Justin Verlander. Heath hates Justin Verlander. Number 11 overall at starting pitcher.
You like to go to those extremes, huh?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I do really like what Justin Verlander did. I think he was when you account for innings and all the innings Kershaw didn't get, I feel like Justin Verlander was the second best pitcher in baseball this year after Scherzer. 1.96 ERA in the second half with 10.9 strikeouts per nine innings, and he was averaging about 7 innings per start. So we saw, obviously he was a point of debate coming into the season. Was that great stretch he had in the second half last year a sign of things to come, or was it just a hot stretch? And I think he definitively answered that question by taking yet another step forward, regaining the big strikeout rate that he had in his prime, and being an innings eater on top of it. That's to me the definition of an ace. I rank him behind those easy top five, but he's the first one behind them at number six.
This is the second straight player this has come up with. I'll just give the Chris Towers a full season's worth of performance is more predictive than the second half's performance, and then we can not have to say that again.
But even so, full season performance,
right?
Second best in baseball, I would argue.
You would argue.
I would argue.
Well, I'll tell you what he was in fantasy. He was the third best in points and the second best in Roto.
You look at what Verlander did, and really, I mean, it's not just that he regained what he was before, but this was one of the best seasons Justin Verlander's had in several regards. The 10 strikeouts per nine innings. He'd only done that once before in his career. The 80% strand rate. He'd only done that once before in his career. The 255 BABIP was like the second best number in his career. So he sold me last year that he's back to being a top 12 pitcher, but I think it's natural to expect a little bit of regression from what we had this year.
But you're using his prior career as a way of bringing down this year's stats. When I don't think, like, Verlander's a former MVP.
Right.
Like, he was
very good.
Best pitcher in baseball for several years, and you're saying he was too good this year relative to that? That just seems like a weird argument to me. Probably the reason the strikeout rate was the second best ever is because hitters strike out a lot more.
Okay.
Right?
That's part of it, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm not going to expect him to strike out 10 batters per nine again next year after 3 years of being right around eight. I just, and not to say that I'm expecting to go all the way back down to eight, but I would expect it not be quite as good next year if for no other reason than the strand rate and the BABIP should normalize a little bit.
Yeah, and what's interesting about him was more fly balls than ever this year,
which would lead to a lower BABIP.
And more home runs per fly ball by far. He had 10% of his fly balls were home runs.
Now, that actually started in the second half last year. He became more vulnerable to home runs.
Well, so, part of that's because he gave up more hard contact than he'd given up in 10 years.
I feel like whatever change he made, that's related to it, and it still seems like a worthy trade-off to me, obviously. I mean, when he was getting more ground balls, it wasn't working out so well for him.
Okay, so that's Justin Verlander. All right, nice little debate there. How about Zach Greinke? 20th for Scott, and Heath, now you're the high man on Zach Greinke. You got him 15th.
Well, I just stay in the middle and let the swings go to either side of
it. It's true. You ranked him the same. You're ranking him the same this year as you probably had him last year.
Very, very close to what I had him
last
year.
With a 3-point difference in ERA.
Yes.
Oh, what a strange season for me, Zach Greinke.
It was a really weird year. Right in that range with Greinke, and I think probably the guys that Scott has ahead of Greinke and I have behind Greinke are some pitchers that definitely have the upside to be better than him. But I have a hard time believing that Strasburg's going to stay healthy for a whole year. I'm a little bit concerned about DeGrom's elbow. And so I have a hard time putting those two guys ahead of him.
I just don't know what makes... I guess their injury concerns are more severe.
Right.
But I don't know that Greinke's performance concern is any less than their injury concerns. Because he was at his worst.
Right, but you didn't think last year that there was any chance that Greinke was going to repeat what he did the year before, because it was a complete outlier. And this year is the exact same thing. Like, do you think he lost it last year and he's not going to be good?
I think there's a chance of that. I mean, ranking him 20th
right.
as I have him means I'm betting against it, but it also means I'm guarding against the possibility that that there's something deeper wrong here with Zach Greinke.
Does it bother you with Greinke that he's such a command pitcher, and he's not a flamethrower that can just kind of be off and still overwhelm you with his stuff. You know, he kind of relies on hitting the corners, and I don't know. I don't love that in a right-handed pitcher.
That's always bothered me. And really, the control, you look at his career track record, the control is really the only constant for him. Strikeouts, they're 2 years ago, he had 9.2 strikeouts per nine. 2 years ago, not being the amazing year.
Right.
You know, he was 9.2 strikeouts per nine.
Well, that's good, right?
It just makes him less predictable, is all I'm saying. I don't know what default Zach Greinke is, which also raises concern in me.
Okay. Yeah, all right, I'll weigh in here. I'd definitely take DeGrom over him. You got, so after Greinke for Heath, Strasburg, DeGrom, Carlos Martinez, and then Danny Salazar, who's 19th for Heath and not even ranked in the top 36 right now. For Mr. Scott White, Salazar with his like 1.34 whip last year, 3.87 ERA, but he was pitching hurt, and last 10 starts he had a 7.36 ERA, first 15 starts 2.22. All right, Heath, you have him 19th. Scott does not have Danny Salazar ranked. You're looking forward to a nice season for Mr. Salazar next year?
Yeah, and again, I think this is a guy that I probably got a little bit lower than where I had coming into last year, but not a whole lot. He's still... I think he's still on the upswing of his career. It was weird last year, even when he got off to a great start, his control was still a little bit of an issue. He's one of the guys, though, that as far as the health, I'm not as concerned about. There's even been some rumblings that maybe he could find some way to pitch in the World Series this year. I don't think they're looking at a long-term injury with him at all. He's thrown 484 career innings in the majors. I don't think we've seen the best out of Danny Salazar yet.
Now, let me read some of the guys that Scott has ahead of Danny Salazar to the back of his top 36. We're talking Tanner Roark, Rich Hill, Felix Hernandez, John Lackey, Steven Matz. All right, Scott, how come you couldn't find room for Salazar?
Because his numbers last year are pretty awful. I've lost a lot of confidence in Salazar after that great start. The home runs have been way too high throughout his career, but obviously he took a big step back with control. And I do think there are durability issues here, inherent durability issues because of his size, because of the power he generates with his arm. I'm not sure he's capable of being more than 180 inning pitcher, and obviously he's just 137 inning pitcher last year. So he's only a plus on one leg of the fifth triangle right now, strikeouts, and I'm not confident he's going to give the innings on top of it to deliver a good strikeout total. So, I'm not impressed.
I don't know that he needs to throw a ton of innings to give you a good strikeout total. He's pretty elite when it comes to strikeouts, no?
Yeah, he's got to throw up more than 137 and a third.
Well, okay, if he gets hurt, yeah. If he just has like a normal season and doesn't pitch deep into games, I still think the strikeouts will be fine, but.
They'll be fine. They'll be fine.
I get 195 2 years ago. That's a good strikeout total.
I'm not really sure, you guys were making fun of me for not liking during the season. I'm not really sure what makes Salazar better than Carlos Rodon at this point.
Stuff?
I guess the strikeout rate's a little better, but
we've never seen Rodon put together a season like Salazar's 2015.
Okay.
I don't think we've ever seen Rodon put together a season like Salazar's 2016.
This season. Rodon was the better pitcher this season. Right?
Well, but here's the thing. When you look at Salazar's numbers, Scott, it kind of reminds me of Verlander when you're holding his stats when he was probably pitching hurt. I mean, remember what he was going through, is skipping starts and having arm issues. And they're really making his stat line look a lot worse. Now, even when he was great, had a 2.22 ERA in 15 starts, he still walked 43 batters in 93 and a third. He still failed to pitch six innings in too many of those starts. So he was overrated. In fact, Heath called him a sell-high candidate. I remember that very well, right before things went south for him. But I don't know that you can look at his overall season numbers and really say that's who Salazar is, because I think that injuries played a role.
Well, I mean, a big difference between him and Verlander is Verlander's thrown, you know, he's thrown 230, 240, 250
innings. Oh, yeah,
at a time. At Salazar, like that's actually a theme throughout my starting pitcher rankings. It seems like I increase it a little more, but every year, but this year especially, durability is going to play a big factor for me. I feel like particularly with velocities up, with strikeout rates up, we see it more and more every year. If a pitcher hasn't proven he can throw 200, 210 plus innings, I'm not going to just assume he can. I think that's not a good policy, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
But I don't feel like you're penalizing Strasburg and DeGrom in the same way for durability issues.
Well, DeGrom has thrown 200. I think they both have thrown 200 plus innings before.
Yes, Strasburg's done it once in 6 years, 5 years. 6 years, really.
Yeah.
Strasburg obviously has durability concerns.
That's fair, but at the same time, on a start-by-start basis, he doesn't. He was taking on an ace workload, 7 innings, 8 innings at a time.
Well, I mean, Salazar is probably the only guy you can say. Is there anybody else other than Salazar that doesn't pitch deep enough into games in this conversation?
In this conversation, no.
Like, I don't know. It seemed like you kind of changed the argument there. Like, I mean, if you're going to say that Salazar has durability issues, I think Strasburg probably has even more durability issues. He's probably the biggest red flag in baseball.
Until mid-August, Steven Strasburg was a shoe-in for the NL Cy Young.
It doesn't matter. He gets hurt every year.
That's 75% of the season, Adam. That's getting it done.
Every year. I mean, this guy is...
Well, not
do I really
year,
have to defend?
2 years ago he didn't.
All right.
I mean, are you really, if you're between Salazar and Steven Strasburg, who has the better chance of throwing 200 innings next year?
Oh, throwing 200 innings?
Yeah.
I would say it's basically equal.
Salazar's never even thrown 190 before.
I would give it to Strasburg, I guess. Strasburg is obviously better on a, you know, on a
and,
per.
And Strasburg is a better pitcher than Salazar.
Strasburg walks less than half as many batters as Salazar does.
Right,
so,
but we're just talking about durability.
Yeah, nobody's taken Salazar over Strasburg.
Strasburg in 5 years has been better than 185 once. So Salazar's only had 3 years. And he hasn't done it yet.
But if Salazar is walking 4 batters per 9, or even 3 batters per 9, can he get 200 innings? How many pitches is he going to have to throw to get the seven innings at a time it'll take to get to 200 innings over a season?
Well, if he'd have made 34 starts or 33 starts last year, he would have.
Well, I don't think it makes sense to compare him to Strasburg. I think it makes more sense to compare him to guys like John Lackey, Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill, and Tanner Roark, who are 33 through 36 in Scott's rankings.
Yeah, and the main difference between him and those is durability.
Yeah.
I think Salazar has virtually zero chance of cracking the top 15 next year.
I think that's really bold when he's shown us he can do it. I mean, zero chance of cracking the top 15.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have the innings to.
So if he doesn't get hurt, he's going to throw 205 innings probably at his pace over the last 2 years.
That's really his pace over the last 2 years?
He threw 185 in 30 starts.
What makes you think he's going to get more than 30 starts?
I said if he doesn't get hurt, he would make 33 to 34 starts. That's what Major League Baseball pitchers do if they don't get hurt.
Well, okay. I mean, this is an interesting discussion. So I can understand. I'm a little surprised, Scott, just for this, right? I mean, I totally get durability is an issue, and he's got no chance to be a top 15 pitcher in your mind. He doesn't agree, but I mean, I get your point. But not putting him in the top 36 is different than not putting him in the top 20.
Well, that gets back to, I don't think he does anything well except miss bats.
Okay. Well, that's a different argument and an interesting one. All right, so that's Danny Salazar. Let's go to our next guy. Matt Harvey is in Scott's Top 36, in fact, Matt Harvey is number 24. This one really surprised me. He's not ranked for Heath in the top 36. I didn't even know that Matt Harvey's going to be pitching much next year. Tell me what to expect from Matt Harvey.
What are Matt Harvey's chances of throwing 200 innings next year?
Yeah, 0.0%.
Better than Salazar.
No way. No way.
That's ridiculous.
He has 0% chance.
I wouldn't rank him that high if I didn't think that.
Oh my gosh. That's not happening.
He's never made 30 starts. He's got 189 inning max, which is basically the same thing Salazar does. He's more injured than Salazar is right now.
But he has so much better control than Salazar. I think you're underestimating the effect that has on pitch counts and consequently innings.
All right, but forgetting about this, he had a horrible injury and a serious surgery. I thought that they were talking about his 2017 season being in doubt. Like, what's the latest on Matt Harvey?
Well, he's supposed to be ready for spring training, but it's completely possible he'll never be the same again. I'm not denying that. I just think it's more a statement on the starting pitching itself that I'm able to rank him as high as 24th. Because that's the point in the rankings where I feel like the guys above it could be aces, the guys below it can't be aces. And so I might as well gamble on Harvey maybe being okay.
I guess that my problem is that, like, Salazar was much better than Harvey last year.
Okay, that's fair.
And Harvey's more injured than Salazar is, and Harvey has a worse injury history than Salazar does. So, like, I don't see an argument other than maybe Matt Harvey won't be hurt, and last year was a complete.
Well, but Harvey was worse in a way where we kept feeling like, okay, I mean, still throwing strikes. Maybe he can get over this. And we found out eventually, okay, he was hurt. It's probably why he was.
Like Salazar was. When
unexpectedly
he was
underwhelming. Salazar's always had efficiency issues. Don't even go there.
But he
this
did
has always
pitch,
been a problem for Salazar.
He did pitch very well when he, you know, for the innings he was in before he got hurt, really.
Yeah, and that might be all his arm is capable of handling.
I just
Salazar. Said something to set off my Siri. I don't know what did I say? Did I say seriously?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Shut up, Siri. Let's see if she apologizes. Okay, Scott, sorry. And I think the argument for Scott and Harvey is that at his best, he's been a lot better than Salazar has ever been.
That's true. Yes. If I would put him in my top 36, I probably won't until he makes a start in spring training.
All right. How about Aaron Nola? Now, Harvey was 24th for Scott and out of the top 36 for Heath. Flip it around for Aaron Nola, who's 24th for Heath and not in Scott's top 36. Heath, you can lead this one off for Aaron Nola.
Yeah, this is probably one I think that maybe deserved more criticism than even Danny Salazar did. But because Nola, kind of like Salazar, got hurt and then struggled.
Wait, deserves more Scott criticism or more Heath criticism?
No, I think Scott's probably more right in criticizing my ranking of Nola.
Oh, okay.
But before he got hurt, he was so good. And I really felt like he was safe coming into last year. I just wasn't sure if he was going to get strikeouts. And he got strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And so if he can just stay healthy next year and he has those strikeouts and he's what we thought he was before, I think he's going to be a really reliable number two.
Scott?
I don't know that I can disagree with anything you said there. I did feel like he was safe, and I wondered if he'd get strikeouts, and he got strikeouts for 12 starts. It just seems like too big of a leap too fast, I think, especially considering, you know, as great as those 12 starts were, you know, the last eight, he had a 9.82 ERA.
But he was still getting strikeouts.
He was still getting strikeouts, and obviously he wound up on the DL, so, you know, there's a chance that the injury impacted his performance then, but it goes back to we're basing this ranking on 12 starts, and I feel like he's leaping pitchers, a large number of pitchers whose 2016s ended up being even more promising than his.
Well, I'm not just ranking it on 12 starts, because I'm ranking it on what we thought he was as well coming into last year. He was good in 2015 in a small sample size. He had a good pedigree.
Right, but you look at what his numbers ended up being in only 20 starts, and you look at what other pitchers with a lot of upside ended up being in, you know, 28, 30, whatever starts. And suddenly he's there's a lot of good pitchers who I don't think he deserves to rank ahead of.
Right.
Based on the way the first half of his season went.
To quote the movie, deserves got nothing to do with it. No. I look at it and he's thrown 188 innings in his career. Basically 33 starts, a full season between the 2 years. He's got a 4.29 ERA, which is terrible. He's got a 3.48 FIP, which isn't bad at all. He struck out a batter per inning over those 2 years. He's got good control. I really think this is a pretty clear case of a pitcher that exhibited excellent control for the first 25 starts of his career, got hurt, couldn't find the strike zone, got pounded, and made his numbers look awful.
But I think you're changing the argument. You're saying you think Aaron Nola is a good pitcher. I think Aaron Nola is a good pitcher too.
Right.
The argument is, does he deserve to rank 24th? And I don't think he does.
Are we ranking these pitchers based on what they've done over the past 3 years? If so, no, he doesn't deserve to. I'm ranking him based on what I think he's going to do in 2017.
So
it
maybe
seems like a big leap to take. That's
why does it seem like a big leap when he was doing it?
For 12 starts, he was doing it, yes.
And you can't buy the injury explanation?
And then for 8 starts. No, I can buy the injury explanation, but there are a lot of pitchers who you don't need to make any kind of explanation for to get them in your top 36, or certainly your top 30.
Okay. So some of those pitchers, I mean, I keep mentioning the last four lackey.
They're on merit. I will always trust the pitcher who's already done it versus the pitcher who I just think could do it.
But there is not one pitcher in your, you know, from 20 on in your rankings that doesn't have a really big question mark.
Not as big as Nola's, though.
I think Harvey's is bigger than Nola's.
I mean, Julio Teheran coming off a very good season, Masahiro Tanaka, Carlos Martinez, Aaron Sanchez, Jay Happ.
Yeah, I mean,
there are questions with probably at least two of those five I just rattled off, but not nearly as big as the guy who's coming off a 10 ERA and it's the last 8 starts we saw him pitch.
Okay, you know, it's just like I keep going back to the Verlander example of a guy whose numbers were inflated because of his. Or I guess deflate, you know, depending on how you look at it. His numbers were worse because of an injury. And I guess that's a difficult thing as a fantasy analyst to rank a player appropriately, because we don't know how much the injury had to do with it. You know, there was that stretch where it was like, God, what's wrong with Aaron Nola? His control is not as good. And isn't that, we don't know if that was the injury. We know that at some point there was an injury. But I don't think he ever said, I was pitching hurt during this stretch, right? I mean,
no. Oh, no.
Right. Well, let's, I don't think so. Let's look at it a different way. Aaron Nola makes 12 starts, has a 2.65 ERA or whatever it was, suffers a season-ending injury. How are we ranking him then? Because I'd have a hard time putting him in my top 24 even then.
I think it would really depend on, I mean, you say season-ending injury. Is it Tommy John and he's going to miss part of this year? Or
no, it's just the season's over. He starts new in spring training. Just instead of it being, you know, the exact same injury he had. It just happened 8 starts early.
Well,
that went on the DL.
Okay, that's an interesting point. And you know what? Speaking about all your durability concerns, how about this little topic here when you're ranking your pitchers? Would you rather have the guy who's going to be good for 200 innings or a guy who could be great for 160 innings and then you try to fill in the blanks and with the waiver wire?
It depends on how you're getting those 160 innings. Is he going to be great for 160 innings and then be on the DL for a month so you're clearly not starting him?
Yes.
Well, then I'd rather have that guy for sure.
Right. I mean, I think that was an easier yes answer before last year, but pitching got so bad on the waiver wire. Like, it used to be so much easier to fill in the blanks, to plug the gaps when you lost a pitcher. Like, this year was a struggle to find pitchers that you liked.
And maybe that's, you know, that probably has a little something to do with why durability is important to me. If you have, like, having a good pitcher, a pitcher that you know is a good pitcher, was a big differentiator in fantasy this year, I feel like, because most of us were struggling to put together a halfway decent staff. I feel like when you see a pitcher who already has done it over 200 plus innings, that gives you more, or at least it gives me more confidence that he can do it again than one who did it for like a 110 inning stretch and then ran into troubles of one kind or another. Not to say that, you know, that pitcher can't get over the hump at some point, but some will and some won't. And how much do you want to invest in the probability when you have a guy, the possibility when you have a guy like John Lackey, who, you know, he's not going to lead the league in ERA or WHIP, but he'll be fine in everything, has a great offense backing him, so you know he's going to win a lot of games, and you can trust he'll be there for you all year. And I think I'd rather go Lackey.
All right, guys, let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This is from Brandon Foley, who says, "Dear John, and Tony." Oh, this is actually funny, because he told us what the answer is, and he was so wrong about one of them.
Is that the... Oh.
So he said, these are John Gibbons, and he wrote this last week. John Gibbons, John Farrell, and Tony Francona, the AL managers left in the postseason right now. I think it's Terry.
That's not right. No.
Now, we give him a pass for the John Farrell one, because the Red Sox were still in, but it's Terry Francona. It's Terry. I think you know that, Brandon. That's a typo. Brandon has been an everyday listener for the last 2 years, and he finally won a fantasy league, actually 4 out of 5, but he needs help in a keeper league. Roto auction. Pick 3 keepers. D. Gordon for $19 for 2 more years. Nolan Arenado, $16 for 2 more years. A.J. Pollock, $11 for 2 more years. Jonathan Villar, $2, 3 more years. Trevor Story, $1. Jackie Bradley, $1, both 3 more years. So let's go ahead and put a star on Nolan Arenado, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Nolan Arenado, and I think Pollock's a pretty easy choice too. Right?
100%.
Now we're looking at D. Gordon for $19, or Jonathan Villar, Trevor Story, or Jackie Bradley for $1 or $2.
It's between those last three for me: Villar, Story, Bradley, and I'm not sure who I have the most. Like the first one, the top one I would draft next year is probably Villar. I'm not sure who I have the most confidence in over the 3 years, though.
I'm going to go with Story.
Story? Scott?
I'm going to go with Story.
Yeah, the park makes it. The park really helps cover his deficiencies. I'll say Story, too.
All right, Story it is. AJ in Pomona, California. Dear John and Ramsey. I'm not sure. We'll look that up. Reverse Sparps rule. Oh, this is a long email. Are you guys ready to
listen?
Oh, John and Ramsey. That's John Snow and Ramsey Bolton. Damn it, I should have known that. All right, so AJ says, I had emailed you guys about a year ago inquiring about implementing a zero starting pitcher strategy, and my email was the email of the day on November 3rd, 2015. I recall Adam calling me a wimp and Scott calling it a gimmick rather than a strategy, although at first I was a bit dejected that my go-to fantasy baseball podcast did not approve of this gimmick. I persevered on. I wanted to prove the naysayers, Adam and Scott, wrong. So 11 months later, I'm happy to say, in your face, I won my championship this year with the zero SP strategy. In my opinion, it is a viable strategy depending on league settings and rules. I'll skip around here. I encourage anyone in head-to-head categories leagues with low innings minimums to give it a try. Here are a couple of pointers to better implement the strategy. Know your reverse SPARPs. That would be the relievers who are eligible as starters. David Phelps, Edwin Diaz, and Alex Colome are pivotal because you can put them in as starting pitchers. And they racked up saves and holds. Okay, hitting is essential. When drafting, make sure your first 7 or 8 picks are hitters. Be active on the waiver wire. Closers are very volatile. 4 out of the 9 closers I drafted either got injured or lost their jobs early in the season. Know your setup, men, because soon enough they become closers. And don't keep more than one batter on the bench for the regular season. The majority of your bench spots should go to relief pitchers. P.S. I miss Al. And this strategy can work. What do you guys think?
I think you guys were really mean to say these things.
Yeah, I know. A whiff.
I think it's fun. Didn't Jonah Carey basically win our Roto League this year with a similar strategy? Like almost no starting pitchers.
He had few starting pitchers.
But it was all built almost entirely around hitters and relief pitchers.
But he won by like half a point sneaking in the last week.
Winning is winning, Scott.
I don't think that's true because you want to win every year, right? I think it gives you such a thin margin for error that, yeah, I'll double down on my gimmick.
I like it.
I think it's a gimmicky way to play. I don't think it's within the spirit.
It's fun.
Of what it's going for.
That's what it comes down to right there. Even if this were the most successful strategy in the world, Scott White is not going to approve because he thinks it's a gimmick. He thinks it's not within the spirit.
And I think, well, I mean, the bigger point is that you need a very thin margin for error. If any one person is out there competing with you for relievers on the waiver wire, that's probably going to trip you up. First of all, if you investing your first eight picks in hitters and three of them happen to bust, that's going to be a big problem too.
If three of your first eight picks bust using the same strategy as everyone else, you're in a lot of trouble.
I think you're less backed into a corner. You can work yourself out of that a little easier.
I just think like, if you're doing the exact same thing everyone else is, you have to be smarter than everyone else to win or try harder than everyone else on the waiver wire.
Well, you have to do it in this case, too.
Well, here's a distinction, though. This is a holds league. So there are, I don't know what all the categories are, but it seems like there are more categories that favor relievers than starters.
Oh, I would assume ERA, whip, holds, and saves. You get four right. pitcher categories where you win, and then wins
that's
and strikeouts
difference.
The other two, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I don't have a problem with it.
I feel like, well, having a problem with it, I mean, I don't.
You do, you call it a gimmick.
I don't know. Okay,
no,
I wouldn't
want to do it myself, and I would feel like if the league was set up so that it made it possible, then maybe I'd want to tweak the rules because I don't think that's like a real major league team couldn't get away with doing that. And the whole point of fantasy is to emulate real baseball. So.
Well, then why do we have two catcher leagues? For God's sake, why do we have two catcher leagues?
Second catcher plays a lot for most teams.
Not as much as he plays in fantasy on a two catcher league, which is every single day, every single week.
No catcher plays every day.
What I'm saying is he's in your fantasy lineup every day, you know, every week in a two catcher league.
Yeah, but I mean, no team starts a fifth infielder either.
No team starts
a fourth or fifth outfielder.
Right. You're right. So that's why I think you're being a little too strict with the purity of fantasy baseball. I mean,
most importantly, in my opinion, is just that have rules that everybody in your league wants to have.
Yeah.
And don't worry about the purity of fantasy baseball for your league, unless that's what you want. If you want to have a pure league like Scott does, then play in that type of league.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, you should have rules that make your league happy, sure. But if I was in the league, it wouldn't make me happy. That's a fair opinion to have.
Absolutely. And I agree in that regard. If I were the commissioner of a league, I would put in innings limits, innings minimums to make sure that people couldn't really do this strategy.
Yeah, but what are you putting it at? 18 for a week?
I tried it with like 15 because I, you know what? Right. The first time I was the commissioner of a league, a categories league, I had never heard of this strategy.
Right.
And so somebody drafted nothing but relievers, and then people were kind of like up in arms. So I tried to, after the draft, implement an innings minimum, and obviously the one owner who went with that strategy.
Oh, that's terrible. That's a terrible. You can't do that.
Yeah, no, I made it very low because of that. So I think it's got to be like 20.
Even with 20, if you've got seven relievers, you've got a pretty good shot of getting 20 innings over a week. Most relievers pitch 3 innings a week.
Yeah, then it should probably be more. 25?
I don't think most pitch, because that would come out to 88 innings over a season if every reliever's pitching 3 innings a week.
Okay.
3 innings a week is 88 over the course of a season.
I mean, then just make it like 50, so you obviously have to throw starting pitchers out there.
That's too much.
That was bad math. It's
way
it's 78. I'm sorry. Not 88, 78. But anyway,
it's more math than I'm willing to.
Why is 50 too much? 50 is normal. No, you're right. You're right.
50 is way too much.
Well, I'm just saying to completely eliminate the possibility and just make it so that.
I think leave open as many strategical options as possible.
And here's the thing. We didn't even talk about this. Not only am I okay with it, I think it's a pretty good strategy.
Yeah.
I do. because you can get those relievers late. You do load up on hitting. I mean, the problem is you taking eight hitters with your first day picks compared to my five hitters with my first day picks certainly does not guarantee you better hitters than me.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I, that gets back to the thin margin for error I was talking about. Like,
if you do a bad job drafting, you're going to lose.
No, it doesn't have to do with doing a bad job drafting. It's just you can't predict the future.
I don't know how it's any different than any other league.
Let's read one more.
Okay.
This is from Cody in Washington. Dear Tom and Jerry, I know them. What? This is a weird question. Nobody ever talks about this guy. What is Brett Gardner's value in 2017? I am in a deep 16-team roto league. I can either keep Gardner for $13 or take a shot on Malik Smith, Ben Revere, or Trace Thompson for $1 and spend my savings elsewhere. 16-team roto.
I wouldn't want to keep Brett Gardner for 13. I wouldn't want to keep him for more than like 3 or 4. So, I mean, I'm not particularly excited about any of these $1 options. Maybe Malik Smith would be the one I'd keep. It would certainly seem more doable if Nick Markakis gets traded. But, do you have to keep any of them? I might just throw them all back if Nick Markakis doesn't get traded.
I only thought, I don't like the idea of keeping Gardner at 13 at all, is in a 16-team league, if you're actually considering keeping those guys, it seems like a lot of people are being kept. I don't want to start the season in a situation where I've got a part-time player as a starter.
Yeah. All right.
So, I don't know. It's not a good situation to be in.
No, it's not. Gardner was a pretty big bust this year, so $13 seemed understandable at the time. That one hurts. Okay, that's it for the show. Fun show. I like it. Good stuff.
It's great to be back.
Yeah. That's Heath Cummings. Hopefully we get him every week on the podcast. Can you commit to that?
Yeah.
Great. Sure. It didn't seem sincere, but that's okay. We'll play it by ear. Yeah. For Scott White and Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. See you later. Machado.